on my pillow that won't dry on their own. Beyond my years, I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, day by day, day by day, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome to the Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I am a recovered alcoholic. My name is Mike. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise that might or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? Yes. Some tips for meditation is focus on your breathing, breathe out self, and breathe in God. If everybody's ready, we'll get started. Open with the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, it should be in the pews ahead of you. If not, just say after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light. For those who are lost, sick, and dying, can find your love through me. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Marion to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it is kind of important to know what one is. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn off. Also, Marion will be doing the next series the next 12 weeks, so let's give her a nice welcome.
I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it's true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden voluntary changes or revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among a rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realized that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped in an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
We ask that everybody please keep your feet off the kneelers ahead of you. And remember, we are all guests here, so be respectful. Tonight's speaker, it's his 12th week, Peter M. It's been a great experience so far, so let's see what God has in store for us. Peter.
My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And, this is it. So let's get out of here while the going's good, and we'll get Marion up here right away. Thank the group for having me for 12 weeks, tonight being the 12th week, and glad everyone survived the hurricane that never showed up last week, and everyone's back this week. So I'm glad to be here. Thank the group for dealing with me and for 12 weeks and getting a chance to share with you as honestly as God permitted me to share with you. And I hope I created a culture of transparency from me to you and whatever I was getting back from you. I've been around these things for a lot of years, and lot of times it's frustrating if you hear a canned talk or a canned workshop. And as a participant sitting and listening to that, it gets frustrating really quick. So hopefully I didn't do that and was able to let you in to where it made me uncomfortable. That's always a good thing. June 23rd, 1980, I was separated from alcohol, and the journey began. This afternoon, we're talking to some folks where I work about something called the Innocent Climb that I got from a basketball coach. He talked about this Innocent Climb where we start off at the beginning. It's almost a flying blind time. You know, you're just getting sober. You're counting days, and you can't believe you got 31 days, and you're telling everyone, I got 31 days, and I got 35, I got 50 days, and thinking there's going to be a monument made for you in front of the treatment center. And you just can't believe you're counting days, and you're going, wow, in a week I'll have 40 days, and come on, week, and this way I can get my 60-day check. And I did all of that. And I was with a bunch of guys in a halfway house. And we were broke. We were like 10-time losers, all of us. And there was something about it, the camaraderie that existed, where we just bonded together. No expectations. We were all guys. There were no women involved. In fact, when the women got involved, when guys found girlfriends, the whole pack blew up. And the ladies, it happens to them as soon as they meet Mr. Wrong, the whole thing goes to hell. But there we were. And we'd go to Perkins. You know, we'd pool our money, and Perkins would give you a whole pot of coffee, and we'd knock out like a six-pack of coffee. I mean, it was the same. And we'd be wired up on coffee and too much sugar, and we'd just talk. And then we'd go back to the halfway house and talk ourselves to sleep and get up and go to a meeting or to a group. And, you know, if one of us was speaking, we'd all go. If someone was going to get a 30-day chip, we'd all go and support. And no one was looking for accolades. It was just one for all and all for one. It was a wonderful thing. And I remember going back to Minnesota about five consecutive years. I'd go right after Labor Day. And the very first time I went back to my halfway house, everyone was obviously gone. And I remember I could hear the voices of the guys waiting for somebody to pop out of the door. And it was all gone. And it was sort of sad for me, but I'm probably the only guy still left of all those guys who came in. And I look back on those early days, being in treatment, especially the halfway house in Hastings, Minnesota, and not a dime to my name, waiting for Dad to send me $20 so I can, you know, go to the store and buy myself something. No job yet, wasn't even capable of having a job, but the hunger for sobriety was there. And a lot of us had that. And I look back on those days. They were wonderful. I was sharing with some folks today. I just arrived at this halfway house. And, you know, I come out of a little treatment center, and I get there, and there's like 50, 60 guys running in 100 different directions. They're there for a while, and it was fast. And these guys had like 60 days, and I thought they were like Moses. How do you get 60 days? And one of the counselors pulled me in the office with a senior member and says, take him to a meeting tonight. And that was against the rules. You had 2 weeks of orientation. You couldn't leave campus, and they took me to a meeting. And what happened was indescribably wonderful. There were four of us in a Bonneville. The windows were open. There was a beach ball called the Sun sitting on the end of the cornfield. They took a dirt road into St. Paul, and there was a song on the radio. And as we're driving, I could hear the dirt road and the dust in the background, right out of a movie. And there's me from Brooklyn, New York, sitting with these guys. And I remember this feeling came over me like, I think I'm going to be okay this time. I was sharing with this gentleman this afternoon. I really think I'm going to be okay this time. I don't know how, but there's something. I finally feel okay about being in my skin. Now, it didn't last forever because I was so new, but there was something, the innocent climb. I was so appreciative to be sitting in the back of an old Bonneville that didn't run too good, going down this dirt road I'd never been to a meeting in St. Paul I'd never been to, with three other guys that I just met. And they were very friendly and very caring about the new guy on campus, and went against everything I was made up to be, because I'm from New York. You don't trust anything but the money in your pocket, and here I am with these three guys, and off we went. It was a fabulous night. And I remember I slept good that night, the innocent climb. 28 years later, I can still get excited about little things like that. 28 years later, I can still be okay with doing laundry on a Saturday night because I'm in my home and it's safe and it's clean and I'm sober and everything's good. When I first got sober, I had my first apartment. I think I shared a few weeks ago with you. I moved in. There was nothing in the place, zero. And somebody gave me a sleeping bag. And I had a big book, a Bible, and some AA bumper stickers and a crucifix above my door because I'm a Catholic. And I got into the sleeping bag, and I was in paradise again. And I was very appreciative to sleep in a sleeping bag because I come from hallways and abandoned buildings. And I was excited about that because I was sober, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was walking with God. I had a sponsor, a big book in the Bible, and everything's good. I remembered everything I did. I wasn't sleeping next to someone. I can't wait to get out of here. And I woke up the next morning, I was still sober. Unbelievable how that works, right? You don't pick up a drink, you wake up the next day still sober. How is this possible? Because all I did was drink. And those are my early days of the innocent climb. And not that this isn't innocent, but it was just different then. You know, no expectations. I should be having this much money. I need to be dating. I need to have this kind of car. It's just I'm sober. Everything's good. I am sober and everything is good, period, non-negotiable. But we start to get stuff, and then we start to need stuff. And needs get dressed up as, or wants get dressed up as needs. And then I need to acquire more. Then I need to be popular. Then I need the AA relationship. And then I need the car. Then I need the watch. And then I need, and fill in the blank. I got to get a different vape because my vape is not big enough. It's the size of this big book, but I need a bigger one. I walked into one of these apartments the other day. A guy was smoking the vape in the house. It looked like a crack house. It was smoker. And then I need, and I want, and I got to have. And the great thing about being sober at the beginning and broke is there's not much that you look for because you can't have it. And I'm glad I didn't have a bundle full of money when I first got sober because you might have a different speaker here. I don't know. Because how much money I need is just enough not to need God. And at the early days, if I had a bundle full of money, I don't know if I would have continued to seek out those meetings because I had money, which the way I was back then made me better than you. I don't need you as much. I'm liquid. I got some cash on me. But I identified the guys who were like me who were losers for a long time. And we'd have to literally pool our money to pay the tab to get a couple of pots of coffee and a couple of pieces of cake because we were broke. But it was a great thing. And going into a meeting, your coffee was free, and you could sit down. The old-timers would say hello, and I'm cool in this meeting for an hour. No one threw me out. And you'd hear a speaker. And after the meeting, you know, you'd walk home, 2 mile walk back to the halfway house. Or when I was living in Brooklyn, you know, I'd walk home or hop on a bus. And that's how I would do it because I was sober. And the great thing what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me is a program in this fellowship. Because I wanted to believe, and I did believe in God, but I wanted to believe more. And I found there's a huge difference between even wanting to believe or believing in God and actually having a relationship with God. And what the program inside this fellowship gave me on a silver platter was a relationship with God. And once I began to have a relationship with God, all perceptions and conceptions about everything changed. Everything. Even how I dressed. Even how I spoke, I started to speak different. I didn't sound like a thug anymore because God didn't create a thug. That's acquired. Street lingo is acquired. The whole thing that we do when we're new because we're from South Philly or we're from Brooklyn or from Mass, that's all acquired. It's all delusion. It's not what God brought here. God brought humble men and women here. And as I start to wake up a little bit, I thought I was weak and cowardly because I wasn't talking like the rest of the folks. But I wasn't, because God contradicts everything I think I'm supposed to be. And it's walk softly and carry a big book. So everything began to change for me from the inside manifested outwards. And people began to see that with their own eyes. I was completely unaware of it. I remember being away from my family a while and sitting down at a little family gathering, and my dad told my brother, "Your older brother speaks differently. He sounds like he went to college." I said, "Yeah, it's called Alcoholics Anonymous. They taught me how to talk properly without cursing every other word and not to curse in front of women, how to be a gentleman, a sober gentleman, and treat women with respect and grace and dignity, contrary to the way I used to." I got that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't get that from the street corner where I thought that was the place to learn. I didn't get that in a bar. I didn't get that anywhere else but in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got an education on how to do life sober. because I've learned, because I'm sober, it doesn't mean I do life well. Probably do life worse. I'm probably in greater danger when I'm sober without a spiritual program and just abstinent. And I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the great thing that God gave me was the G.O.D., the gift of desperation, where I so wanted what the elders had. And the elders being 5, 10, 15 years, 40, and 45 years. I wanted what they had because they seemed to just walk different. They weren't interested in spotlight. I would see men with 40 years making coffee. I would see men and women with 40 years at the door. And they would just dress so nice. They just looked like you wanted to get around them. Very humble men and women. And they were experts in the 12-step call. Their hands were in the dirt all the time. I love that about them. And they had their life being problematic, but somehow they chop wood and carry water in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the great thing I loved about them, one of the many great things I loved about them, and when I was out of line, they let me know it. In no uncertain terms. Because this was their house too. It wasn't my house. It was our house. But it was their house too. And they taught me. They brought me. I literally got brought up. I showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous at 28, and I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I got an education from my dad and my mom and some good family values. Some weren't so good. But I learned to grow up from boys to men, from a young boy to a man in Alcoholics Anonymous, only because I was hungry for it. If I wasn't, I'd be dead or drunk now. So having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps, huh? That's what it says. By now, if I've gone through the first 9 proposals and have awakened spiritually and continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness in 10 and 11, by the time I get to 12, I've had a spiritual awakening, which means I have a relationship with God. I'm not wondering what this God is about. I have a relationship that has depth and weight. Maybe not as much depth and weight as the guy who's been doing this for 30 or 40 years. I don't know. But I have something at this point which has made me completely different, inexplicably different from the inside out. And people can hear it and see it before I'm even aware of it. And if I have this relationship with God, it's usually a relationship that I want more of. I like the effect. I love the effect produced by God, which means I suddenly have a life of a lot of prayer. And then I begin to have a life of a lot of prayer, not even praying for me. I'm praying in the morning. I'm praying in the evening, 11-step says. I find myself praying during the day. I'm praying when I'm about to go in for a job interview. I'm praying when I'm in the coffee shop. I'm praying a lot. In Scripture, there's a piece, I think it's Luke 6:12, where he talks about the carpenter praying through the night. And whether you're Catholic or not, we can look at this man as just a spiritual teacher, if that works for you. He prayed through the night. If he prayed through the night, I better be praying a little bit, because I'm just a drunk who likes to kill himself. And so I begin to experience something that came out of this prayer life, where I wasn't being rocketed around a room like a ball in a pinball machine. And I wasn't attached to what people thought of me or said about me. I like to hear nice things. It hurts when I hear bad things. But I wasn't so attached to that, because my eye was on God. And my teachers walk with that as well. So I first learned the power of interior prayer. I first learned the power of seeking, looking to find God in everything, even adversity, even in things that are controversial. See God in all of that. I couldn't do it with a closed heart. I had to do it with an open heart and an awakened spirit, which is what the 12 steps do. Bill talks about emotional sobriety. Marion Sponsor does a great talk on this. Emotional sobriety. We can talk about mechanics in here, you know. Practice these principles, all my affairs, and how to 12-step a drunk, and what sponsorship looks like, depending on what your influence is, what your lineage looks like. But what does it look like practicing principles in all my affairs? What does it look like and sound like when we say we've had a spiritual awakening? What does it look like navigating out there outside the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous? How am I doing? How am I doing with no money? How am I doing with lots of money? How am I doing when the relationship ends or the new relationship? Am I in a hunt for a relationship rather than hunting for God? How am I doing? Am I cash register honest or a little dishonest? Do I have a life of rigorous honesty? even if it means sacrificing myself and I take a little mud on the chin here? Do I have a life that's an open book and transparency? When I get to do these things, I pray for that. Let me be as open, God, as you see fit, as transparent as you see fit, because if I give you a can't talk, I don't get well, nor do you. So what does it look like? What does emotional sobriety look like? Am I still looking for accolades wherever I go? I got to be the man in the spotlight. I got to be the woman in the spotlight. I still need stuff. Or can I be close to the ground, humble, hummus, close to the ground, walk softly and carry a big book? Folks like me, that's great. If they don't, that's okay. I don't like a lot of people when I came in. I found out I was so wrong about them. I have a dear friend in South Jersey. When I first met him, I said, I don't like him. He just walked in the room. I don't like this look. He's a big service guy. He says, who's this guy think he is, Mr. AA? Oh, my God, what my mind didn't say about him. And then one day I'm sitting next to my sponsor. He spent about 10 minutes with my sponsor. He didn't even say hello to me. Now he's convinced I hate him. Today I love him. He's a dear friend. And I was completely wrong in my perceptions about him. So we all have that. He didn't care whether I loved him or hate him at the time, because he was an awakened member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But emotional sobriety is not getting caught up in that stuff. How am I doing when things aren't going so good? Or when I'm in the parking lot and little Mary comes in with her 30 days and I decide I can sponsor her with my 5 years or 10 years or 60 days. That's not emotional sobriety. That's just a drunk without a drink and I'm looking like a drunk with a drink in them, right? The great thing about this power called God and what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, this awakening, transformation, will be given to us. It's just a byproduct of going through these 12 steps. How many meetings do we go to, and they talk about a lot of things, but you don't hear enough about the big book. You don't even hear the big book. You don't hear about the 12 steps. It's a closed discussion meeting when someone's going to tell their story, and then everyone else dumps for the rest of the meeting. And you don't hear anything of depth and weight on, what do I do when I leave here? How do I have this spiritual awakening? What's the message of depth and weight? I have a responsibility to do that today. For me, it began in the moment, worst moment of my life, June 23rd, 1988. Next to my mom committing suicide, this was the worst moment. I've been arrested too many times. I've been homeless too long. I've been beaten up really bad in the street a few times. I've did some bad things to other people. A lot of lousy things have happened to me, and I've done to other people like most of us in this room. But my mom committing suicide and me laying in an abandoned building on June 23rd, 1988 with the two bullets. Those are the two highlights of bad things that happened to me. I've been sexually abused for a couple of years, really bad. Those two events, they stand out more than anything. How do you deal with 14? Your mom killed herself. What do you do with that? What do you even process this? How do you process it? You don't. And the other was laying in the back of a hallway where I really wanted to die and I couldn't even do that right. But all necessary in this huge tapestry that God puts together, which my mind and many of us, if we put our minds together, said, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't sound godly like I know what godly is. I don't operate on that level. None of us do. And many of the things that God does absolutely does not make sense to us or to me. It doesn't sound godly. But how do I know? And in this gift of desperation, I just didn't want to die for the first time in my life. And many of you have heard what happened to me. I made a plea to God, and next thing I know, he picks me up out of a trash, really out of a trash, and places me on this path, on this new road, a road, as a book says, less traveled. I've never been on this road. In fact, I will tell you, so many folks who come into Alcoholics Anonymous, look at the numbers, are not going to be here in 5 years. Many of us are going to be dead or drunk. That's frightening because alcoholism or addiction usually wins. It's the minority of us that make it long term. How many of us in this room are going to be sober till the day we die who are here tonight? I don't even know if I'm in that equation. That's how serious this is. But June 23rd, 19, God put me on this road less traveled. Now what do I do? And it was people in Alcoholics Anonymous who rallied around me because their sobriety was that important to them that they knew in order to keep it, they had to pass it on. Here comes this new guy. Don't know his name. He don't look too good. He don't sound too good. He don't smell too good, but we're going to work with him. And his name was Peter. That was me. And they said, sit down, have a cup of coffee. And then the walk began. There's something in another book that says, the road I was asked to walk, I never did before. The methodology you gave me, I never experienced before. And the God you're asking me to have a relationship, I never had a relationship with before. And the only thing that keeps me putting one foot in front of the other is the fire that burns in my soul to be right with my Creator. If you think about it, when we were drinking, we were looking somewhere in that bottle is the panacea that's going to fix me. And for a while it did. You get nice, and then you lose it, and you go for it again. Somewhere in the bottom of this whiskey bottle, everything's going to be perfect, and it's going to stay perfect. So keep the liquor going. But it never happens. So we all have that. It's like in our DNA to get right with something so we can be okay in here. Because we're not okay in here. And length of sobriety doesn't make me okay in here. God could have, would have, if he was sought. So I'm on this path, and these people rally around me, and I start hearing about this big book. Big book, big book. I don't even know what a big book is yet. I didn't even know who Bill and Bob was at this point, but they taught me. And I was so hungry to get well, I wanted to learn. It was important to me to know who Bill was and who Bob was. And when this thing started and what it looked like, I got interested in history, and I began a journey through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will tell you, like a rocket ship takes off, my life began to change with all the mistakes I made. So having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps, hey, how many of us have outstanding amends that we haven't made that we could be making tonight without causing more harm in so doing? We got a lot of those. Then have I really had a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps? I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of steps 9 1/2, 9 3/4, 9 2. I need to be clean, clean to walk through the archway here and to the world of the spirit. It tells me we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. It says we try because sometimes we just can't. Sometimes the drunk don't even want to hear from us. And I was guilty of overkill at the beginning. I'd ram the book down someone's throat. I ram my story down his throat. They couldn't get away from me for 5 minutes. The only time he said, leave him alone. He's not ready. And they show me page 96 in the big book. While I'm trying to get this guy, I can't hear the one banging on the back door trying to get in. So we try to carry this message, whether we're speaking or meeting a new person. I wouldn't say that speaking is the least effective way, but it's not the only way. Very times it's after this meeting's over, you get a drunk in a parking lot and pour a cup of coffee and share a cup of coffee with them or meet them in a diner or sit down early before the meeting where you can kind of ante up and find out what's going on. Gain enough trust where then you can bring them to the big book and begin the journey. And that to me is the most effective way. Is sitting down with the drunk with no interruptions. Letting them tell their story, let them ante up, and I do the same. So they say, yeah, that's me. I drink like you. I'm like you. I got the same fears as you. I did the same nonsense you did. Now we're one. And they're going to ask at some point, what did you do, if they don't know? And then I can freely give, because I got spiritual consent, to give them this information if they want what I have and willing to do what I've done. And in about 30 days, that guy's sponsoring somebody. Not 90 days, like our fellowship says. Nowhere in the first portion of this big book does it says 90 meetings in 90 days. First portion of this book does not say 90 meetings in 90 days. I was doing one of these, and a lady put a note in my duffel bag about where it says make 90 meetings in 90 days. She was really annoyed with me. But it wasn't in the first portion of the book. So we begin to walk with somebody through this book in maybe 30 days. They're sponsoring people, and you can see the light in their eyes goes on. There's a couple of things I'm getting moved to talk about. Practice these principles in all my affairs, which I was being pushed to at the beginning. Do I have more affairs than principles? Do I have secrets? I have to remember my lies. How many times am I coming to an AA meeting and getting a 90-day chip when I'm stoned? Right? How many times am I coming to a meeting high and trying to play it off I'm sober and I'm not? How am I doing around tax time? How honest am I then? How am I practicing principle in my affairs? Here's one. Am I practicing fidelity to God, or has money become a little bit more important than God? Am I making meetings involved in this fellowship? Well, I got other things, and I get to the fellowship when I can. I sit in the back, and I leave right after the meeting's over. And I don't care about a newcomer. I need a meeting. I didn't invent this stuff. This was what was taught to me. Some great things a book talks about in working with others. By the way, this chapter, step 12, working with others, it doesn't talk about having had a spiritual awakening here anywhere in this chapter, because by now we've had one. They're going to tell us what to do with it. It says practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Intensive work. So my sponsor showed me. Intense means you're sitting down with the drunk and walking them through this book. You're holding them during a dark night of the soul when they just have to scream. You're holding them, whether it's on the phone or literally holding them, when it's a really long night and their world has collapsed again. And sometimes all you need to do is just hold on to them. You don't have to say anything. We just need to know that you're there for me. Intensive work. It's not the quick phone call. It's definitely intense work, but it was not texting either. Because we got that nowadays. I'll text you my inventory. No, you won't. No, you won't. I'll email you my fourth step. No, you're not going to do that. You're going to put pen to paper. You're going to come to me, and we're going to read it that way. Intensive work, which means I'm going to be working just as intense as the prospect is. And if the prospect's not working as hard as I am, then he's not willing to do what I've done. I got a guy who keeps asking me to sponsor him. But life always gets in the way. So he blows off appointments. So I gave it to him a couple of days ago about this. So what does he do? He has a 1 o'clock appointment with a sponsor, me. At 1:30, my phone rings. I don't answer. I'm working at 1:30. I get a text message. He decided to go to the meeting. The meeting ended at 1:15, so he's calling at 1:30 because he had to stop and get something to eat. This guy is not sponsorable. If I was Flacco the drug dealer, he would have been there at 6 a.m. waiting for me at 1:30 or 1 o'clock. No? Yes? Maybe? Okay. Okay. Do I speak truth? Right? I would wait in front of the liquor store for the liquor store to open. I get there a little early this way. No one got in front of me. 40 newcomers hate me already. All right. My therapist didn't say that. Practical experience shows that nothing so much will ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. Go work with the drunk. Marion's sponsor, Polly P., always says, go work with the drunk. Go work with the drunk. Mike was giving us the hurricane reports every 5 minutes on social media. I shut off Weather Channel and waited for his next text. And I text Mike, go work with an alcoholic. It says, this is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. We can help when no one else can. I mean, just think what they just wrote. That's not being arrogant or bold or prideful. That's just truthful. We can help when no one else can. I work in treatment. I've been working in the treatment center industry for many years. And I've taken a lot of hits in AA for being in that industry because some folks accuse me of selling AA, which is not what I do. Good people, many good people in that business, they work really hard. Some of those therapists work till 9 o'clock at night doing paperwork on how to get people like us well. But treatment alone, if that worked, we wouldn't need AA. There's about a 1 to 5% recovery rate in a 30-day treatment center model. They come to us. We can help when no one else can. Because, like that story where the guy's in a ditch and people are yelling, don't worry, you're going to be okay. And the alky comes along, jumps in a ditch, and the drunk says, what are you doing? He says, I've been here. I know the way out. We can help when no one else can. That's a great thing that God has given us. We don't need letters in front of my name. I don't have any letters in front of my name. I spent 20 minutes in college. How do I do what I do for a living? Because I know alcoholics. And I was taught by some of the best. How am I able to stay in this business and be needed? Because I know alcoholics. I don't need to read about an alcoholic out of some book. I'm around them all the time. And God gives us that spark where we can cut right through everything. We know the drunk. We can help when no one else can. It says we can secure their confidence when others fail, including the wife and husband, the children, the grandparents, the parents, whoever it might be. We can give them what they're lacking. What great amount of power and responsibility God has given a fall-down drunk like me. He says, I'm going to get you up, get you running, and then you're going to go take care of my kids. Think about this for a minute. We are going to take care of God's kids who are lost, dazed, and confused, who don't know which end is up, who all they do is know how to drink and go to treatment and detox. They're going to show up at our door called Alcoholics Anonymous, and God says, I'm going to give you enough to get them fixed so they can go get someone else. The whole thing makes no sense. There's probably some psychiatrist out there going, this is impossible. I've gone to some of the best universities, and I can't get Joe sober. He walks into a room full of 50 drunks who've been in jail, out on bail, and they get sober. How is this possible? Because we got a common denominator among all of us that they don't have. It's called G-O-D. It's called God. And what Alcoholics Anonymous is about, hate to ruffle feathers, is about God. This whole thing is about God. And when we get away from God, we have a middle-of-the-road meeting where people are dying. We have sponsors in Alcoholics Anonymous. A sponsor is not something I can identify, someone I can identify with, that I have something in common, that I like him or her. It's a teacher who's going to give me what they have freely through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Teach me about the fellowship of the Spirit and the spirit of the fellowship. Teach me about our history. Teach me about traditions. And most importantly, get me through this big book, however we walk someone through this big book, so the fire is turned on. To get you ready, get him ready, get her ready to meet someone at the door who's out. The pilot light's not even turned on yet. That's why we're sober. That's why God got me sober. That's our responsibility and our primary purpose. Stay sober, help another alcoholic achieve sobriety. It doesn't say stay sober and send him to a shrink. It doesn't say stay sober and send him to a treatment center. Get the drunk and get them well. Which means I'm not hanging around anymore. Which means I'm here to work. We're all here to work. I mean, we're here for ourselves. We're here to work. Who's coming in? Who are the white chippers? Who are the 30-day guys? And later, where are they? The old timers, let's go get them at the door. I was brought up that way. A guy get up there, raise his hand 30 days. A bunch of us said, get him after the meeting. Don't let him get out of here. A white chipper, we're getting him right after the meeting. That's why we're here. Let's have coffee and donuts and shoot the breeze for a little while, clap at the speaker, and then we go home. Who's new? And who's around a while who's dying on the inside? That we can quietly go up to them and say, how are you doing, old timer? And maybe they'll say, not too good. I'm embarrassed to tell people, but I'll talk to you. We got work. Why do I have the spiritual awakening so I can do a 12-step series? Well, it's a little piece of it. I'm able to do that. But what about somebody who can't do this? But they're really good at putting a meeting together like this, like Michael. Maybe they meet in the back room. Maybe somebody's really good at greeting. Maybe somebody makes some really neat coffee. Maybe somebody's in charge of literature. You know, all these jobs where no one, you know, no applause for that, like the back office work. Every one of them can get somebody else sober. And that's why we're here. That's practicing principles in all my affairs. Yeah, I know it's 11 o'clock and I really got to get up early for work and I got a flight to catch, but I got a new one in front of me. I'm gonna burn the candle now. I'm going to be here. You know, the game's on, Super Bowl, the phone rings, it's a drunk. It's a 12-step call. I want to watch the game. A book says we're going to be inconvenienced. Sometimes we are inconvenienced. Practice these principles in all my affairs. They were there for me. I'll miss the first half. I might miss the game. There'll be a lot of other Super Bowls. This person may not make it through the night. What's more important, the Super Bowl or this guy's life? Because if I was on the end of the phone, I would beg for you guys, come get me. Have we forgotten that? Let me never forget that, huh? That's why we're here. And I got asked to go talk. Giants were playing the Bills a bunch of years ago in the Super Bowl. When he missed that field goal at the very end, I got a call. Can you meet us? We got to go to this meeting. Now. Now. You know what I did? I said, I got to go. Knicks are playing the Pacers, a diehard Knicks fan. Reggie Miller back in the day. I got my brother over with his wife. We're having like a mini Super Bowl party. We got food. We're all hanging out. The phone rings. Louis the Butcher's drunk on 86th Street and 3rd Avenue. You got to come get him. Not now. Guys, I'll be back later. I got to go. I got to answer that bell. Because if I don't, I'm a hypocrite and a fraud. And every fiber of my being said, you go. You'll be fine. There'll be plenty of games. I've been given a gift of having another day. He may not. That's why we're here. That's how I look at this stuff. So we meet here for fun and for free. You don't have to put a dollar in a basket. We ask you to put more than that anyway. You don't have to if you don't have it. No one's going to do an account on you and see how much you're putting in. You just come in, have a cup of coffee, have all you want. But be ready to go to work. Yeah. And the guys leave the ladies alone. And the ladies leave the men alone. Some are weak and some are vulnerable. I'm going to pounce on that like a tiger going after his prey. Shame on me. Not in a sacred room called Alcoholics Anonymous. Do that when you go home. Not here. We text during meetings nowadays. I didn't have cell phones when I came up. We have cell phones now. So you look out at a crowd and you got 45 people texting while you're pouring your guts out. You're leaving your lungs on the podium and they're texting. They didn't hear a word. Because going for coffee or flirting over the phone is more important than maybe saving your life. Shame on you. Not in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says you can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. I need to know that when I'm sitting with a drunk. I wasn't the most appropriate guy when I came in. I cursed a lot. They didn't say you got to get out. They says we don't do that here. Maybe I dressed inappropriately. They said we don't do that here. Sometimes we'll say things that aren't appropriate. We're going to just act out a little bit. Maybe I'm new and I see her across the parking lot and the sponsors get over here. Stay right here. Leave her alone. I had to be taught. I wasn't well. That's what we do. Us elders in the room, that's our job. Not let somebody else get it. That's our job. We've been given a gift of maybe double-digit sobriety. It's our job. We got to get our hands dirty once in a while, and it's not a popularity contest. It's about a saving life business we're in. It says life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up around me, to have a host of friends. Guys, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no friends. And I literally mean I had no friends. None. When I got into treatment and detox in 1988, I had no friends. I lived in an abandoned building. One of the things that was killing me was after what you come to the realization how lonely you really are. You walk the streets at night. No one gives a damn about me. I have no family anymore. I'm lonely. Not for even female companionship. I would just like to sit down and talk to somebody. And here I am out there, and I'm like in a jail cell. We know that. And we provide that kind of comfort for others. We see this fellowship grow around us. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. To watch loneliness vanish, I'll share a quick story with you. My youngest brother, a handful of years ago, 8, 10 years ago or so, was diagnosed with extreme bipolar. And he was on a downward cycle. He was in rough shape. And I just got back from a talk from Texas. And I was living in New Jersey, and the phone rang. And my dad says, can you come here? My dad lives in Fort Lee, New Jersey. Can you come here? He said, I don't know what to do, your brother. I'm about to call 911. What's wrong? And he told me. I sit tight. I get there as fast as I can, and my brother's a puddle. Now, my brother's about 6'2", 6'3", all muscles. Big strappy kid, all ripped. I hate him. You know those guys got the definition and the whole thing, and I go, forget it. You know? And I'm looking at this, and a street kid, a tough kid, and he's a puddle. And he's talking, and about what he's experiencing. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous and what I do for a living, I got him down off the ledge. and he started to breathe and get back in his skin again. He was not better, but he was at least stable. But I knew he needed some medication, et cetera. So we got him to a doctor, and thank the good Lord, my brother is doing good today. Thank God. But I remember calling up a bunch of AAs, a bunch of men that I sponsor and some friends. My brother kept sharing how lonely he felt in this place. He felt all alone. And so I called AAs up, guys I sponsored, some other men. I said, would you do me a favor? My brother, would you just give him a call? Give him a friend over the phone. Obviously, they did that. And the reason why I asked AAs and the men I sponsored to do that, because when my brother was saying, I feel so alone, it's killing me, I knew that we know that feeling. Bipolar or not, we know whether we're living on Park Avenue or a park bench, there's a moment where we all experience, oh my God, I'm so alone. No one understands this kind of torment. No one understands why I can't stay away from this stuff. I'm so alone in the middle of a stadium full of people. I knew we knew that. And so they called my brother one at a time. And they befriended him. Some of them knew him. And they talked about their lonely experiences, which pumped life back into my brother. He eventually got to a doctor. And I'm forever grateful for many things in Alcoholics Anonymous. But one of the little bullets, one of the little blessings was that particular week span where AA showed up for a non-AA to take care of one of God's kids. That's what my Alcoholics Anonymous, they didn't say I'm busy, I have to, absolutely, give me his number. And I didn't ask if they called, my brother says, your friends are calling. He knew a couple of them, and they talked to me, and they talked to me, and they talked to me, and they talked to me. This same brother loves Alcoholics Anonymous, he's a civilian. He writes inventory, I showed him how to do inventory. He reads scripture, he goes to church. He loves this big book. He reads a lot of the authors that I have studied over the years. He's on a spiritual path along with his medication, with all the challenges he's had in his life, and his life has not been easy. But somehow he chops wood and carry water as a civilian. Attraction, not promotion. That's practicing principles in all our affairs. Just a couple of more things, and we'll get out of here. Okay. In the chapter Vision for You, we talk about, there's a story about the a little history in Vision for You, and there's a story about the 12-step call, probably the best 12-step call you'll ever hear about. It's when Bill and Bob pay a visit on Bill Dotson. And it's a great story because Bill Dotson's in a hospital in a detox once again. He did it again. Beats up nurses on the way in. Not a good guy when he's drunk. When he's sober, he seems to be okay. The problem is he can't stay sober. So they bring him from the ward down to this private room. And his thinking was, I'm in a private room. I just bought the farm. This is bad news because you got to the private room. It meant you were in serious trouble. And he comes to in this private room, and he's got Bill and Bob, two imposing people standing in front of him. They showed up probably the way they dressed back then with suits on and fedoras. They probably looked like feds, right? They were intimidating. What I love about the way they dressed back then is they were representing Alcoholics Anonymous. So they showed up like sober members of this sacred fellowship. They had that kind of integrity. And so they're at the foot of this guy's bed, and he says, who are you guys and why are you here? And then it began. They tell Bill Dotson he's detoxing. He left on the third day, by the way. He didn't AMA. He left on a third day. So we got to assume Bill Dotson was there about a day and change, and these two guys show up. And they tell him, we're giving you treatment for alcoholism. They begin over the next hour, to each of them, to tell Bill Dotson their story. They ante up to identify. And Bill Dotson keeps saying, that's me, I drink like that. Got him. He wasn't some doctor, wasn't some clinician, wasn't somebody who learned about alcoholism in a college book. These are my guys. They go on to tell him about how alcohol deteriorates the body. They talk about the body. They talk about the mind. They talk about the spiritual answer they had found and how they got to it. The guy's laying in a detox bed. 3 days later, Bill Dotson tells his wife, fetch my clothes. never drank again, became a member in good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous and in his community. That's a miracle. That's a 12-step call. They didn't go and say, are you feeling okay today? Have you dealt with your acceptance issues? Would you like a process group? More medication. They just laid it out on the line. He was hungry and off they went. I'm so grateful when I got here that there were elders at the door waiting for me to come in. I'm so grateful I've been able, as Sam Shoemaker says, for me to stand by the door. It's my primary purpose. My life is one of service, guys. Doesn't make me better than anyone in this room. Definitely not. Certainly not worse. But it's where God has put me, a life of service. I serve all the time to the point of exhaustion. And Marion knows how exhausted I am. But how do I say no to a place that gives me life through God? How do you say no to that? How do you say no when you get a call to go speak in some town, you don't even know where you're going, and there's three people, and you drive 2 hours to speak to three people? I'd rather do that than be drunk. How could I say no to Alcoholics Anonymous? How could I say no? So I work beyond exhaustion, and I do whatever God allows me to do. And my take on this, as long as God breathes life into me, I will suit up and show up for fun and for free and chop wood and carry water. I'm the broken pot that God pours the water in and carries it in. And I'm so grateful for that and God keeping me right-sized. God has removed many things that I wanted. It was for me. And has given me many things I did not want. It was for me. And at the end of the day, I look back and say, God knew exactly what he was doing. At the moment, I couldn't see it, and I couldn't feel it. And this pain I interpret as being very bad. But if I'm going to practice these principles in all my affairs, my trust and reliance, it comes upon him. So I lay all my troubles at his feet with bowed head and bended knee and say, Father, you take me where you want to go. You show me and give me the courage, strength, and direction and the power to practice your principles in all of my affairs. Because on my own, I am nothing. That I'm clear on. To talk to you for 12 weeks. I do this a lot. I don't know how I do that. I'm usually quiet. I like to sit in the back, have a cup of tea, a cup of coffee, a soda, and just chill. And God says, nope, I got other work for you to do, man. Got you sober, this is your job. But I gladly make coffee. You don't want my coffee, by the way. We'll all get white chips at the end of the meeting. I love doing service greeting. That's one of my favorite commitments. But this is where God has me. And I try to sponsor as best I can, as many as I can. And I've said this from a million podium, guys. I never felt good as a sponsor. I don't think I do it that well. Some of the men I sponsor say, no, you do fine. But I just never felt like I'm that guy. You know, I hear guys ripping apart the big book and dissecting words for 10 weeks. And that's not me. I just don't babysit that way. But I do my best as God allows me. And chop wood and carry water. Thank you all for listening. Peace.
Can we thank the speaker one more time? Now we'll have Fred with the secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. Before I get started, we want to thank Peter and give him a special gift. I have a limited edition ultra classic push pin gift for you. Come on up and get it. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked John to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
John, alcoholic? Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thanks. 1940 style Big Book sponsorship. From the Ford to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. You can please stand up. Everyone who's available for sponsorship, can we please meet with him after the meeting? Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting in the other room over here where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
We have tonight's sessions and all the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study. We really break it down and bring new insight into the book. And those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. If we could just give Peter a special thanks one more time for the last 12 weeks. Close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
Keep on smiling.